Welcome to Anchored and Alive, seasonal nervous system support for women who are ready to stop forcing growth and start living in rhythm with their own energy. I'm Blaze, and each week we explore emotional steadiness, burnout recovery, boundaries, and self-trust in ways that honor the season that you're actually living in. Here, we choose soothing, sustainable growth without the hustle, hype, or self-abandonment. Let's anchor in and come alive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special episode of Anchored and Alive. This week, I wanted to bring in someone to speak about imagination and creativity, and I met Sarah Bush a couple of weeks ago, and we had an amazing conversation about what it means to be creative, to be inspired, and to work with creative and imaginative energy throughout the seasons. So I wanted to welcome Sarah here today to talk about this in a deeper way, especially because imagination is her area of expertise, and she has a community of people that she nurtures, helping them to get in touch with their creative process and to create and use things that are tangible in the real world and that address real nervous system issues that we have. So I'm so excited to welcome you, Sarah. Hi, and could you introduce yourself before we get started in your own words?
Oh, sure. I'm Sarah Bush. I have a Substack called The Pink Teacup, and I have a website with my art. I'm an artist, I'm a writer, and I'm a teacher, I guess. And I'm obsessed with how the imagination is kind of an underutilized, what I call a human superpower. And I just really like helping people expand their notion about what their imagination is capable of and how they can really turn it into their ally.
Ooh, I love it. And I love the language that you use. Could you tell me more about what your definition of imagination is? So if someone's coming in and listening today, that they understand really what you're talking about in a practical way.
Well, you know, I feel like, you know, the imagination is such a part of us that we mostly don't notice it. But then at the same time, people will say that they don't have an imagination or they don't have much of an imagination. You know, in the same way that people will tell you or tell me that they're not creative. And yet everything around us in the two rooms that you and I are sitting in and everyone who's listening, everything you're surrounded by started in someone's imagination. So I really think of the imagination as almost like a four-step process. It's sort of the creation process, which is what we all kind of understand it. But there's also like imagining as, and there's imagining as becoming, and then there's imagination as sovereignty. And those are the four ways I kind of think about imagination.
I like that you're really placing it into our lived spaces and recognizing that, you know, our rooms didn't just look the way they are because they popped up that way automatically. It's that we had our hands in it. Someone built the things that come into our rooms. But also for us personally, when we feel like we had nothing to do with it, we actually chose everything and we had a lot of input into how we're set up and the ways that we flow through our spaces. So it's a really vibrant and living experience that we have that we're not really thinking about. I'm actually curious also about how people use their imagination in, I don't know, creating processes in their lives or creating art, if that's where they're at, and how you're working with your imagination.
Yeah. So when you're creating art, I think that they're very tied together, your imagination and your creativity. I do think, though, that the imagination can really goes out to the most cosmic scale. I think like the reason that we're all sitting here today is human beings use their imaginations to survive millions of years, and that we are an extension of that. You know, it's like a part of our lineage. So in that sort of creative problem solving aspect, I feel like one really helpful thing, I guess, is to understand that the creative process has its own rhythm. And when you are familiar with that rhythm, it helps you move through it. And I think that's true really for any type of project that you work on or any kind of thing you're trying to kind of birth into the world.
Yeah. So what is your experience of the rhythm? Like if you're thinking about the creative impulse and the idea that you have, versus the final expression of it and the process that you go on. Could you take us through like a brief history or outline of that, giving like something that you've made as an example?
Sure. I think of it as a kind of an arc. the creative process as kind of an arc. And I think it just has these very predictable rhythms and even obstacles that happen. And that when I experience that, one, I'm not taking it personally. So for instance, I feel like the mistake that people make about the creative process, even if they're inspired and excited, is they forget that it's hard. Or when it is hard, that's normal that it's hard. Like, I think sometimes people think inspiration means it won't be hard, or that when they see art made by other people that is inspired, that it just flows all out of them.
Oh, and I wish it was like that. No.
I know, it's not how it is. And then, like, I think starting is its own kind of hard. I think the middle is its own kind of hard. And I think finishing is its own kind of hard. And so you run into these obstacles in each phase of the creative process. Like, at starting, you've got the blank canvas, or, you know, when you have an idea in your imagination, it's perfect because it's in your imagination. So when you start to bring it into the world, it starts to become itself, and it stops being abstract. And it's in that becoming a concrete thing that the challenge happens. So that part of starting, there can be a sense of disappointment. Like, this isn't what I imagined how this might seem, or this maybe is a little less electrifying than it was when it was an idea in my imagination.
Oh, I love this. Yeah. And I think too, when we talked before, like, there's also this process as you've moved through even that difficulty and you have something before you, in knowing when to finish or finishing too early and not really being in enough conversation with what you're creating or being willing to let it go. And I found that so fascinating. But what I'd really like to do is, now that we've seen that arc, bring it back to this particular season and the energy of spring, because there seems to be this difference in how we experience our creative energy right now. And I know for me personally, I had so many ideas, and it was this really internal, intimate, exciting, imaginative process over the winter. And particularly in February, I was dreaming up my garden and how I wanted it to be. And when I heard you say, like, oh, it's just brilliant and perfect in your mind, I'm like, yeah, it really was. Like, I had this grandiose, like, 900 square foot crazy garden, and all of the ways each garden bed would relate to the other ones. And now that I'm here in spring and I'm ready to get moving on that, I'm faced with limitations and budget and time and season and the dirt. Do I even have enough light to do that? Where am I going to put it? And then who's in the way? And all of these things are bubbling up. And I do have to deal with them if I hope to make any of it a reality. So I wanted to talk with you about your experience of the difference of the way your process works coming out of the winter and moving into the spring, and what you expect and what you work with and how you deal with all that.
Yeah, that's such a great question. And what you describe is exactly like the challenge at the beginning, like the rubber starts to hit the road, and then you're thinking, oh dear, you know, oh, how's that even going to work? And for me, you know, like, the winter tends to be a productive time for me creatively, because it's very inward. So it's like my private time with my imagination, my private work. And then the spring, to me, my energy goes more outward. So I move from that internal kind of creative space into a more external, more social, more connecting aspect of the imagination. I think of it as like in that imagining as or imagining with. And, you know, the garden is kind of a good example of that, because you are going to now be in a very long conversation with the garden and be doing a lot of listening and guessing. And, you know, I think that conversation piece is, you know, really about not rushing and about allowing. And so, like, when you start to do that, you know, it's like a kind of a commitment to yourself rather than to the end result. And it's a commitment to the thing you're making rather than it's a real commitment to that journey part of it.
Oh, I love your language with this, because so much of my work helping people be in rhythm with their own being and their desires is about allowing. And recognizing that when we make a commitment towards ourselves and doing something that we're excited about or that we love or that's important to us, there's this sense of surrender that has to go hand in hand with it, and saying, I'm going to do my part, and I have to kind of trust that the world is going to rise to meet me, and that also I'm capable of dealing with hard things, and that even though obstacles will happen, or the communication is difficult, or, you know, the feedback from the earth is whatever it is, because I know I've got water and mud and dirt and sticks, I have to do all of that stuff. And I never know what it's going to be, but I can trust that the outcome will probably surprise me, and hopefully surprise me in a good way.
That's right. And I also think that, you know, it also shows us, like, when we start to have doubt or confusion, you know, a lot of that has to do with the stories we're telling ourselves, that we're imagining somebody else would have done this faster. Somebody else would have done this better. What, you know, like the self-doubt aspect, like even when someone's in the middle of a creative process, I mean, you're guaranteed, I call it the messy middle. It doesn't look like what you thought it was. It looks like nothing. You know, it's like cleaning out your closet where it always looks worse before it gets better. And I feel like when someone is kind of new to kind of embracing their own creativity, perhaps is the right way to think about that, they think it's when they run into those difficulties, they think it's some sort of flaw in themselves rather than inherent to the process. And that even people who are great at whatever it is they're doing also experience this exact same thing. So it's not like they don't go through it. They Correct. Just know the drill. So they're really familiar with the rhythm of that process. And so it helps them not take it as personally.
Hugely. Yes. Yeah. Well, I think we're all very guilty of comparing ourselves to other people who are farther along on the path that we had hoped to be on. And I think that the comparison particularly happens in that messy middle and then towards what we think should be our harvest time. And we get confused about when that was supposed to happen. So I think anytime we're starting out a new endeavor, we either think the timeline is so far out, it's impossible, and that comes with its own problems. Or we, for some reason, believe that we're also going to be done in 4 months because this expert professional that we saw on YouTube once got their stuff done in 4 months. And we forget that that person's been doing it for 30 or 40 years. Their outcome is in no way connected to what we're doing, but we feel like it's personal, that something got in the way or we just weren't good enough and maybe it's not for us. And I think it's so important for us to build ourselves up and recognize that, one, we're always accomplishing way more than we think we are. And it's very hard for us when our noses are in it to zoom out. And I think it's important that we do so to be able to take account of all of these accomplishments. You know, I want to hop into this idea of gratitude that we talked about last time I spoke with you, because I think that's something that's so nourishing that helps people get out of that comparisonitis and able to enjoy the process a little bit more and give themselves enough time to even create anything at all.
Nice. I also think that kind of being on your own side really matters in that situation. Like, I think, like, when I'm making my art and I run into a challenge, I've done it for so long that I have faith in my ability to get myself through it. And that faith, you had mentioned that earlier, is so huge. And if you're new at something, in a way, it just takes more bravery to do the new thing than it does. Like, so if someone's making their art for the, and they're like, or like when I make something bad, well, I have made a lot of things I think are good. So when I make something bad, you know, I don't, it's not evidence in a jury trial against me.
Right.
That, no, in fact, I'm not an artist. But when you are new, well, you might make things that might, a lot of things might feel bad to you. And so you're in a harder, like, I just think, well, that actually genuinely takes a little more bravery. And I was in that place in the past, and I'm less so. Yeah. But I think it's like really good to congratulate yourself for having the guts to do it.
I want to touch in on being a tattoo artist. So when I first was apprenticing to tattoo, the very first times you're working on someone, you know, it's the first time, you know, it's permanent, you know, it's going to suck compared to what you're going to do 10 years from then. Like, there's no getting away from it. And the only way you get to 10 years from then is if you do the first one. So I try to let people know it's okay. And of course, always you're going to show up and do your best and you're going to learn. But as long as you're enjoying the process and the person that you're working with, if you're actually even influencing someone else, like I think of tattoos as like this high stakes environment.
Totally.
there's so much feedback from the other person. And at the end, I could be satisfied if I thought, okay, it took me a really long time. I know that the guy teaching me would have had this done in 20 minutes. It took me an hour and a half. Oh my God, this poor person that was like in my chair. But I didn't think, oh, this poor person. I thought, well, this person is having a dialogue with me. I'm delivering the best that I can. At the end, we're both satisfied. They're happy. I'm happy. And they're walking away. And when I would look back like a year later at photos, because you're always like taking a portfolio, right? Seeing what you've done. Yeah. I would look at it and be like, okay, this is obviously like not the best work in the world, but it's also, I would congratulate myself and be like, it wasn't the worst. This person wasn't sad. They left healthy, happy, and whole. I didn't scar anybody up, you know, like just bigging myself up, right?
It's so important.
Yeah.
It's a real thing, especially in any of the arts, because we don't really live in a culture that celebrates the arts. And so you're not, you know, if you're in sports, you are living in a culture that is constantly reinforcing you to yourself. And if.
Yeah, keep going. It's great. You're part of a team. We love you. Exactly.
Yeah. Or even like everything about the culture, like what happens on the weekend and going to the sports bar and watching the game and having a team. And it's just your interest is really reflected back to you all the time in big and small ways. And I just think in the arts, that's not really true.
This is so interesting. So I want to make this a little more tangible for people listening that don't feel that they're artists themselves, because I think, as you said, everyone's creative and we're all living that process, but maybe not identifying it as clearly. So I want to give people some language to see themselves in this and say, okay, putting together your outfits, designing, even like designing the structure of your week. These are things that people aren't celebrating or congratulating you for. But at the end, when you look back, you can go, you know, it's remarkable that I was able to balance everyone's schedules, get everyone to the doctor on time, to school, back home, have these meals made. Like that is an art in itself that no one is ever going to say, hey, you know what? I really think you should do that or congratulate you for doing it great. But we should be seeing it in ourselves because sometimes when something is going to happen anyway, so natural to us and a drive of our own, we just dismiss it as though it's not important, that it isn't creative, that it isn't happening, and that no one cares. And I think if we all just stopped doing all of these amazing things that we're doing and coordinating and creating and cultivating in our lives, life would be really awful really quickly. So I think it's important for us to identify that we are participating always in this creative and generative process.
That's right, because we are creating our lives every minute of the day. Mm-hmm. We are creating a routine. We're making a million different small decisions. We hit a detour. We create a new way home. We're constantly doing that. And I really think like what you're saying there is how important it is to honor your own gifts. And yes. I think, especially for women, I think that feels like bragging. But I really feel like honoring your personal gifts is paramount. Like it's disrespecting your life to not honor your gifts. And if your gift is gathering everyone together, you know, like making that family hum, you know, or being able to pick up one last thing or remembering, you know, oh, we're out of milk and, you know, always juggling everything. That's genuine. That's a real thing.
Oh,
and
it
just
because
it comes easily to you doesn't mean it doesn't count.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. So let's tie that into, because I know for people who are working in the arts, they're going to hear that all the time, that this dismissal of, oh, but well, because you're good at it, it didn't count. Or of course you're going to do that because you're good at it anyway. It's so irritating to do genuinely helpful and foundational work that supports everyone around you and have it ignored or dismissed. And I actually think women in general deal with this constantly, this dismissal and minimization of what we bring to the table, the work that we do, all of the gears that are grinding that are making everything happen. And I think it leads to an exhaustion and an anger. And now that I've said the word anger, I'm bringing it back to spring and going, there's so much frustration and anger right now, just generally. And I think it comes up every season, but particularly in times of strife and stress and terror and upset, which definitely is happening, that the important work that women are doing right now isn't only in, I don't know, the creative arts, but it's in holding the community together. It's in helping their families to survive and thrive. It is holding some stability for everyone around them. And I think it can take a toll, but there's embracing of this energy and frustration that allows us to be creative. And I know that you talking your communities about like these tiny acts of resistance and taking what you have to say and bringing it out into the public in tiny, not subversive, but just like these tiny secret ways, right? So that you're like, how do I, in a joyful and exciting way, create something true and share it with the community quietly, which seems very feminine, effectively, but without making it into this huge loud statement. And I think women are masters of this. So I love that you really embrace that in your work.
Oh, thank you. Because I totally agree with you, like almost like a gentle way of doing it, and that women are masters of this and wanting to find ways of stitching together their communities when they are fraying and trying to find ways of connecting with each other. And also when you were talking, I felt like women are doing all these things that are taken for granted and invisible. But almost, I think a really important step is to reframe what you're doing and to claim it as creative. I think that kind of claiming does help create a shift. And when it comes from inside, that's when it can really last and land. And so maybe it feels a little foreign, or maybe it feels like you're faking it when you are saying it, like, oh, really? You know, it's so easy to. Maybe I'm exaggerating any of my importance, but that reclaiming it, like this is creative. It's like you're constantly creatively problem solving all the time. Know,
but I love that you're bringing up like the imposter syndrome, because I hear that all the time from my clients and friends as well, is that anytime we show up and do something cool, we're quick to qualify it or put it in a smaller container. And I like to let people know it's okay. Like, you don't have to do that around me anyway. And I'm more than happy to celebrate how awesome it is that, like, you made breakfast this morning. Like, I celebrate really stupidly small things continually. And I'm teaching my daughter to do it as well. And she laughs at me and teases me about it. But I see the smile and, like, the soulfulness in having that reflected around her. And I think it's important that we learn to give that to each other as women and as a community, to just acknowledge no matter what you're doing, don't make it small. Acknowledge who it helped and that it's helping you or that it stabilizes something. Because when you consciously do that, you're giving yourself that evidence, just like we talked about like 10 minutes ago. The more you point out the evidence of you succeeding, of you having this experience of contributing and having it make a difference, the more that resilience builds within you and the more inspired and excited you get to continue doing more. So rather than shutting that down in yourself, you're giving yourself an opportunity to build a stronger foundation to keep going.
Yes, 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 yes to all of that. And also, yeah. You know, like for me, I have to be careful. One of my little tells is, oh, my little thing. I make it little. Oh, that little. And kind of trying to consciously catch yourself is important. But I think it might help a lot of women if they realize that by honoring themselves, they're role modeling. Like what you're giving your daughter is such important role modeling.
Yeah.
About that. And so I think with all our training about serving the others, like maybe that path to honoring ourselves can feel a little easier in that framework of you're really doing some important role modeling for younger girls or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think in general, as humans, it is often easier for us to do something in the service of someone else or in the service of a cause than it is for us to think we're doing it selfishly or for our own gain. And I think particularly growing up female, I'm taught, you know, stay out of the way, be quiet, you know, speak when it's your turn and all of these things that I grew up and went, well, I hate that. I hate that shit. I don't want to be treated this way. So how do I become an adult who does her own thing? And then going through years of imposter syndrome and like showing up anyway and pushing through it. But I think in my work, I'm trying to deconstruct that and say it's really harmful for us to feel that we have to push through constantly, that the way to succeed, it just feels so masculine and forcing and difficult. And it's not supposed to be that way, but we've been taught that to succeed, it had to have been hard. To have anything worth having, you need to work more hours and prove how exhausted you are. And so many of us wear that in a weird way as a comfort because we are so freaking exhausted. So we're like, well, at least we have that and we can prove to the world that we've been trying so hard and we've been working so hard. But we end up just completely depleted and exhausted. And my work is centered around helping people like balance their nervous system, figure out how to soothe themselves and actually show up at the capacity that they have to nurture that and build it. And I look at this season of spring as this ability to, it has a natural pushing energy. However, we can allow it to move us rather than us pushing it, if that makes sense.
Totally. And I also think that it's so important to consider that when you work on your own wholeness, you are contributing to the greater wholeness. Yeah. You know, each time, and not having that feel like some kind of selfish rationalization, but that is in fact the truth that you, when you change yourself energetically, you impact the world.
Yeah.
And that we don't, in our materialistic world, we don't think a lot about our energy, but we all know when we walk into a poisonous energy situation or a positive vibe situation. And so we ourselves are a portable energetic.
Oh my gosh, I love it. So at this point, I want to touch back on an idea that we discussed before, which is about the energetic situation. And it's about how often our ideas and our energy and our thoughts are getting hijacked by the news media, social media, advertising, all of the things that are coming at us, as well as our own personal dynamics, our families, our communities, and our situations. So I feel like particularly at this moment in time in the world, there is so much that we are absorbing. And I think it's important that people identify it. And like you said, be truthful with ourselves about the reality that we're experiencing, because sometimes we judge it as, oh, it's me. I don't have enough energy. I don't have enough capacity. This is too hard. And we feel like it's our fault. But I don't really feel that that's the truth of the situation, particularly right now. I don't think it is ever really. But most of us are not used to being aware on that scale to be able to comfort ourselves in the way that we need to be able to recenter and get back on track.
That's right. And I feel like anytime we use the word should, that's our little alarm bell. Like, yeah. I should have gotten this done by now. I should really be giving more to my community. I should be all those things. Like, the should alarm bell is a good place to try to catch yourself. But I also think that the hijacking of our imaginations is a huge thing. And that's because, like, the reason our imaginations can get hijacked so easily is that the relationship between our anxiety and our fear and our imagination is sometimes the closest relationship of all our other, like, compared to all our other emotions with our imagination. So our imaginations, like, our fear drives our imagination more than any other feeling. When it goes unchecked, when we haven't thought about our imaginations. So whenever we're worrying, that's our anxiety using our imagination. Yeah. When we're catastrophizing, that's our fear using our imaginations. And in fact, I actually think, you know, we often will use our fear with our imagination to drive ourselves forward, to take action, because fear can be a very familiar driver. Like, I'm going to fail this test. I better study, you know, then you're imagining. So then you can, oh my God, I got to hand in this thing to work. I got to just do it because I'm going to be in so much trouble. You know, that's our sort of de facto driver. And so when people make a conscious effort to hijack your imagination, it works because it's like a startup, you know?
Here's something that I've found true for myself is the more that I recognized and reminded myself constantly, like whenever I'm listening to the news, it is usually like there's a fact in there, but there's also a whole lot of opinion and spin on it, trying to make me even more upset than I might be if I just interpreted this myself. And not only did they give that to me and their opinion and packaged it as this is the capital T truth, no matter who I'm listening to, they then repeat it every 5 to 25 minutes, and it just keeps cycling, and it's all you hear constantly. And then you hear someone come and they heard it too, and they parrot it back. So once I recognize, like, oh, okay, there's always a spin on this, and why do they do this? It's to keep us listening. In the same way social media has these algorithms to keep us going, like they're making money off of us just being there and being present. How do they do it? They hijack that imagination. And one of the best ways they can do it is to alternate delight and despair, like excitement and fear. So they're going to give you something to be excited about or empowering in some way, but usually in their own spin, and then something to be outraged about. And once you start to see that pattern, it holds less over you. I'm going to say it doesn't stop you from feeling the emotion. I definitely still feel it and I get really pissed off. But seeing that it's there helps me to consciously disengage more often. And that might be helpful for anyone listening who's found that they're caught in that, is to go, okay, there is this cycle. It's preying on our actual biology. Like, we are geared for that because survival says, if something went really great, do more of it. If something is going really terrible, get the hell out of there and never go near it again. And if we don't consciously go, wait, is that even true? We're just at the mercy of it. So
that's right.
Yeah. Like, we want to kind of bring our awareness back into our bodies and feel like, well, what's going on? Am I in fight or flight? And is that generated by anything that's in my actual situation? Or is it just because I heard something on a screen? Is it actually in my community? And I find that when we cultivate these connections with actual real people and have a conversation with a real human that shares our values, that is so grounding and nurturing. And it's something that women are great at. Like, we're great at building relationships. We're great at reaching out and building these communities. And we can really lean into that, particularly in this season, to go, well, wait, I would rather use all of this frustration and everything that's coming at me and direct it in a direction. And that's what I think that spring really is asking us for, is not to start every single project or do every single thing, but to direct all of that energy. And what I see when we're hijacked is that the energy scatters and nothing gets done. We go in too many directions and everything fizzles, and then we self-blame.
That's right. And I think of it as not really standing in my sovereignty anymore, you know, and I think of my sovereignty as my wholeness, you know, and my, like, the full expression of my physical existence. And for me, like, my soul. And so that might sound like giant words, but I really feel like one of the ways I handle that is I try to pivot back into my body and fill that body, like imagining into my body, imagining a light filling my body, imagining that happening, imagining who I am, like imagining into who I am, what I stand for, what I'm good at, all my relationships. And those things can really genuinely help you pivot. And then it also can help you focus, like all the 8 million things going on, and pick something, because you kind of ground back into yourself. And when other people are trying to hijack your imagination, they don't want you to stand in your sovereignty.
No, I think they want you to pin onto whatever they wanted you to do.
That's
and we
right.
spend a lot of our times doing that. And I, like you said, when you're actually feeling into your own body, feeling into your own worth and your own groundedness in your community, your values, your connections,
your
the
skills,
tangible things around
talent.
You. Yeah. The things that you like to do. And then you looked at everything that was a possibility around you. What you're drawn to is different when you're standing in that versus when someone's shouting at you about what to be afraid of. So you might have 10 possibilities and the person shouting on a screen or in your newsfeed says, be afraid of aging, be afraid of whatever, buy this cream.
Be afraid
of aging. You know, when you're standing
in
your
own. That's so good. That's right.
Yeah.
And you know, like, what I love about what you just said is that They don't say be afraid of aging, but that's what they're telling you to do. They're saying this cream does this and this does this. But what they're saying is be afraid of aging. Yeah. And so it's like, you don't get to have my imagination. My imagination is sacred ground. You don't get to have it.
No, because your interests, like if you weren't, I feel like this with advertising, and this is another thing that I really pointed out to my daughter young is, hey, have you noticed when you watch YouTube and stuff comes up and it gives you an advertisement, its whole purpose is to tell you, oh my God, you really need this thing. Get it right now. It might be gone. And it's so cool and you love it. And look at all these kids having a great time. And they're trying to make you feel excited about it so that when it goes away, now you're afraid that it's gone, but you want to capture that feeling again. And you can, I told this to like a 3 and 4 year old, and she, like the next year, watched something. She's like, wow, they're really good at it because I watched this commercial and now I really want these, like, oh my gosh, what are they? Like the pillow things. She's like, I just need all of them now. She's like, but I didn't even know they existed before this commercial. And I was like, bing, 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 kid. That's exactly it. Like, you didn't even know that some of this stuff existed, but you feel highly compelled now that it's an important direction to move in. So I like to help people just find ways to get back into themselves and their body and separate from all of that long enough. And I think that's part of it, is like separate from it long enough, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, to figure out what it is that you wanted to do if you didn't have all that noise. And I think I'm fortunate enough that I'm old enough that I remember a time when if you didn't have a TV on, like there were no commercials. If I didn't have the radio on, I wasn't listening to any of that. So I had to deal with one, boredom, and also come up with my own ideas and ways to entertain myself. And now everything is just streamable. You can ask a question on demand and get an answer from anywhere in the world. Whether it's true or not, we don't know, but you can get that. And it's so frustrating because you're not giving yourself enough time to come up with your own answer. And when I get far enough away from all of the noise and all the things that I'm afraid about, I'm like, well, all I really want to do actually is I want to grow some food and herbs. And I'd like to play, like learn to play my viola. And I want to read some books. And honestly, like, why isn't that enough? It could be.
That's true. And, yeah. You know, you're also making me think about how when your imagination gets hijacked, like, you know, it's easier to soothe yourself with shopping than it is to make your thing. So,
oh, yeah.
So if you're already tired, that can be very tempting. And I feel like
almost necessary. Like, yeah, like we're just looking for anything.
Things though, like to me, I feel like if we could treat the projects that we care about like gifts we're giving ourselves instead of tests we're trying to pass.
Ooh, I love that. That's a great way, I think, to embrace these weeks and this season of choosing what you want to work on as like, I want to give myself some gifts this year. And here are some of the variety of things that I might like. So here's my thought about this early in the spring. I still have a lot of ideas, and I haven't yet figured out which one has the most momentum yet. So I think of it as starting seedlings. So one of them is starting the whole garden is like one seedling that I know I'm going to grow. I have the idea of I want to walk a lot more. I want to work on eating more fresh vegetables. I want to do my viola. Like I have so many things. I have a book club and I'm reading and all of the stuff. So I have all of those and I'm like, all of these are worthy. These are great. The tendency that I can have is to go, great, I'm going to go to 100 on all of them and they're all going to be amazing. But that's not recognizing that I am like, I'm a real human. I don't have the energy of like 1,000 people. I have the energy of just me and it's not infinite. Plus, those are all of my fun things. There's also the like my community and my family and my job and like all of the other stuff that has to happen. And I know every single person listening also has those obligations. So I think it's important to ground yourself right now and go, I am a person and it's okay that I have limited capacity. And it's also okay to begin a bunch of things right now, interestingly, as an experiment to see which one wants to take hold the most. And it's okay for me to then direct my energy towards the things that are feeling more fulfilling or more important or like filling that peace inside of me the most. And it's okay to do that. So now I don't have to make all of the decisions yet, but I can choose to direct my energy more consciously because again, like there's not 5,000 possibilities, not really. There's five.
Yes. And also, I am the same way with the million interests. And even with my artwork, I have an idea for often a body of work, I would say 2 to 3 years ahead of my ability to make it. And
oh, excellent.
One of the ways that I handle that is I make myself what I call way showers. So sometimes they're extremely small. So for instance, there could be like a feeling in my work that I want to remind myself of, I can't get to all of them, but I don't want to lose them. So I make these way showers. Sometimes I write on a post-it note, a word, like on my bulletin board in my studio, it says palimpsest. One, I love that word, palimpsest, and the little silent P in the middle of it. And two, it's all about these layers, these layering, which is important to me in my work. And when I put it there, I'm giving it back to myself, even if I can't address it directly. When I make a collection of images that could be on Pinterest or it could be on your bulletin board, I'm telling myself, I like this idea. This matters to me. I can't get to that idea. I like it. It doesn't go away. Other times I'll actually make one thing as a test for a body of work. And that becomes, and if that works, it's like, I feel like that body of work is safe. It's not going to disappear. I've made this portal into that body of work through this initial piece. And it can just sit there. I don't feel hurried because I've got my portal. And finding your own personal ways of doing, that's why I want to say, like the post-it note, it can be very small or it can be larger. You know, it could be like, I want this area of my garden to be herbs. Well, that's going to have to be 3 lavender plants because I can't afford anything else right now because I'm also planting over here. You know, it's like
yes.
Making these, and I guess as a visual person, I make myself visual reminders, but everyone can do this in their own way that works for them.
I want to add some of mine. So I talk a lot on the podcast about my lists and where I put things, but I also am a huge fan of making things that I want to do as simple as possible. So what you're doing is saying like, okay, there's this idea that I have. So the placeholder, the way shower, it's going to be this one object, but it's not gone. It's right here. I can find it. So for me, I've got the viola hanging right, like I can see it right now on my wall. And it's so that when I walk by, I can just pick it up and pluck a little bit and put it back on the wall. And I never feel like it's a demand. I don't want anything that to me fills me up to feel like something I have to do or that I should do. And I think it's important when we're talking about using our imaginations this time of year, not to make another thing that we have to do because we already have too many. So I think some of this is about planting our own dreams and giving them space to grow. And that feels also really feminine, is this using the energy of spring to allow something to manifest for ourselves. So like you say, with an art project, I have all these ideas and I'm going to give them space. And when it's their time, it's going to naturally happen. I don't have to stress that if I don't do it now fast enough, it'll never happen. I think we have been taught in our society that fast is important, more is better, do it, do it, do it. And we have lost touch with the real rhythm of living. And real rhythm of living needs moments of rest. It needs moments of quiet digestion. It is how we actually function. And you see it and feel it in your body. Like when you give yourself that time to rest, suddenly the ideas and the energy to do stuff arises. It's only when we never get enough rest or sleep or pause that we are afraid and we can't even find the energy to begin or the focus to begin. And I think that's something that's been cultivated in this culture, is to keep us just running on that wheel so that the only thing we have energy for is survival. And I say, no, I don't want that life. I want the life where I get to choose and I can have my garden and I can eat what's in season and do what I'm doing just because that's how I want to be. And that feels like such an outrageous, rebellious thing to do, but it feels delightful and human and good.
It's so true. And that whole idea as well of resting, I think you can even rest with your projects. You know, we can rest with our garden. And sometimes, you know, the hyper productivity message can interfere with the success of something. Like when you are present and allow it to have its season, you know, what you thought you might do initially might end up not being what you do. And if you
really want. I think when we go so fast.
Like sometimes being broke and not being able to afford the art materials you want, or like sometimes it's a blessing. Like sometimes you could have, you know, it's like, okay, these are the plants I can plant right now.
That's okay.
Yes. And sometimes because sometimes your garden can then evolve into the thing it needs to be and not the thing that you had, you know, if you had a bottomless checkbook might've done.
Well, again, I think when we rush everything and we try to leap to the completed idea before we've lived through the process of enjoying it or being a part of it, one, it's so detached from us that we don't feel like it's really ours. So that's right. I think if I had instant success with something like that, it would be boring. Like you'd be like, okay, yay, check, I've got the garden now, but I would have had no experience of actually like doing it myself. Part of my particular appreciation of it is how annoyingly difficult it is for me to just find the cinder blocks to do this thing. But I'm going to be so proud of each one that I locate and how I put it together and dig everything. There's something really, like you said, finding your wholeness in the process. And I think that in our day-to-day lives, there's a lot of things like that that we can feel really proud of because we were present in those moments and we took the time and we built those relationships and we talked to those people and we did all those things rather than forgetting that we did it or taking it for granted. It's important that we live that process because, like you said, it's going to take a turn. It's not going to look like whatever I envisioned in my head. I already know that. There's no way that this like crazy garden of a millionaire exists. It doesn't. But it inspired me enough to get started on the garden I'm going to have.
That's right. And the constraints can be a friend is really what I was trying to say. You know, our constraints that feel like obstacles, maybe they're not really obstacles, you know.
No, maybe because I also think, who are the people I'm going to meet on the way to manifesting this thing? What are the moments that I'm going to share with my family? What are like, in a garden, you have the actual like fruit and harvest, right? Like, yeah, I'm going to have a cucumber. Or I'm going to have like these herbs that I can put in my dinner. So there is a tangible product at the end. But I think it's important not to dismiss like the adventures that are had on the way. Like, what do I get to see when I'm out in the dirt in the sunrise? Like, what animal hops by my garden that I just would have missed? I would have missed that entire moment in my life if I hadn't been out there. I consciously look for those things now, and I like helping people remember to look for them in their lives too, because those are the moments of our lives. And I think there is so much magic out there in nature and in connecting with people and in doing these things that we love. We only get it if we're present. And generally, we're the most present when we're working with our imagination, creating something that we love, being part of something that's true to us. And not something we were forced to do.
Yes. I think that's right. Mm-hmm. And also like even that connecting to your project, you know, in the garden, like you're really connecting with nature. And because we don't have to make a lot of things in our culture, I just think we've paid a price for not having to do that. And sometimes we can get confused and think that a lot of things that we create take a long time. And so it's too time consuming or something. But I think when you start to do it, it like reconnects you back to these normal rhythms of the season. It reconnects you to what is the true rhythm of the creation process. And then that connects you back to yourself, because as humans, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Ooh, yeah. So there was something about what you just said. Can you talk to me about the true time it takes to make something? So connecting to that rhythm of a season, because I know for me in the garden, like this is not a 1 year project. This is a decades project for me. It's going to change constantly. And I don't expect a final outcome ever, but I guess to get to like the closest expression of the dream that I had, I'm guessing 5 years.
Mm.
So I'm like, that's a 5 year arc to even get to something that might resemble what I initially thought of. What does it look like for you when you're experiencing it? Like if you were to start something right now, how would you identify where you are in that process and what a realistic timeline is?
Well, it does vary, I would say, from project to project. My garden is the same way, where it's many, many years. And I had a friend, she sees my garden but she's not really a gardener. And then she started to do more of it. And then she's like, this never ends. I said, that's right. No. I don't want it to end. I love being in the garden. I'm good with that. As you know, it's the idea of a finished product. I thought, oh, I see. She thinks there's like a finished product that she's supposed to be getting, and then she doesn't have to worry about it anymore. But really, it's a relationship. A garden is a relationship. So it's like, you know, a family member. And then like an artwork to me, like what I try to do for myself when I want to start a body of work or create something is do some small step. Because I really think that we talked about it earlier, but that when you have an idea in the ether, that's how I think of it. It's in your imagination. It's in the ether. You are pulling it into concrete reality, like into the physical world. It's not easy. So it's a birthing project process to me. And so I think it's good to think about it as that and then make some small step forward and let it breathe. Okay, what does that look like? I'm just going to visit it. And I'm really big on visiting work and listening and connecting with it as your kind of partner almost. You are doing this thing together, even if it's a painting or whatever. You're making itself. You're trying to listen. What are you? It's like a little kid. You know, oh, you wanted them to be a football player, but oh, they look like they want to be a ballerina. You know, you better help them be what they're supposed to be. You know, like, so this piece comes in and I'm trying to help it be what it's supposed to be as best as I can.
I love it. While you were talking, I was thinking even in terms of redecorating a room or setting up a room, there is a point where you put everything where you think you want it. And then there's this breathing space where you live in it for a little bit and go, oh, no, that chair needed to be over here because no one walks over there. Like, I'm never going to sit in front of that window. I want to look over here. So there's always this conversation that's happening. And I think when we recognize like that is our imagination and our creative process, having enough time to be in relationship with what's actually happening. And it makes you feel like you're a part of something rather than, I don't know, just a pawn moving things around and having to be that. I love, you know, having my own sovereignty and being able to choose all this stuff. That's really important. But there's something very cozy and belonging about recognizing that there is this back and forth that happens even within a space. It's not even just with living things. It's just with objects that we do.
Yes, because I think everything is alive, really. So
I do
that,
too.
That works for me. I mean, if you've ever planted, I planted a shrub a couple of years ago and I was like, my goodness, it's like it was born for that spot. And then this other gardener came by and she said, wow, it's like it was born for that spot. I was like, oh, I know. Is it because that doesn't always happen, you know? Sometimes you plant things and it struggles and you're like, I think I put you somewhere you don't want to go. Let me find you another spot in the garden. I mean, that's so common, really. And when you make art, it's the same thing. Like I can look at a piece that's not finished and I can think, okay, I need to do some work over here. Or like when I've done a commission, someone's like, this doesn't work for me here and here. I don't listen. They always offer what they think the solution is. I don't really care. Like, okay, you have your solution. That's fine. So, but I'm thinking, okay, what's not working? So then I'll fix, let's say there's 3 to 5 of those things on a piece. I will fix one. And then I have to start over because that changed everything.
Well, it changes the whole dynamic. Yeah, exactly.
But so you don't just in a parade solve each one. You fix, you think like, okay, that's more resolved. Now, what do I think? Is everything resolved now? Or maybe not. Or well, maybe something new pops up.
It also lets you know when things are done enough. I think that's part of that conversation that you're having is as you adjust any one thing, everything shifts and adjusts to accommodate in the same way that, like, say a new person shows up in a class and then the whole dynamic changes and the teacher moves the seating around and conversations are happening that weren't. And then someone leaves and now the whole thing is different again. Our lives are like that all the time. So I think locating ourselves in time and space is super important. And it's something that we're all doing naturally anyway. So just bringing that to your consciousness as you're listening to this, you're able to locate yourself right now, how you are, and think about as a listener, like, what are the projects that I'm excited about? And what are the things that I might want to bring to life this year? And how might I identify which things are still cooking or which things are ready to start blooming? And I'm curious what your opinion, like how you would help someone identify that is.
I do think it's a listening process. And sometimes I think you also, you know, and it's still, again, an allowing process. You know, you might be wrong. You might take a step. You have to take a step and be willing to be wrong. And you have to, and that is probably maybe the biggest thing. When we get attached to an outcome, or like, let's say you have a piece or a project and it's really close and you're so, like when I used to give these classes where I'd teach people to make work, and I always wanted them to work on three things at once, because when you work on one, you can't turn away. But also, like, let's say one of, like when you work on three, one of them starts to look kind of good and you kind of like it. And then you get afraid of ruining it.
Yep.
And so you're more hesitant because you're invested in having it continue to be good. And so you can start to work on other things because you don't care about them so much, or you just don't think that they're really working out. So like in the course of a collage class, I'm keeping everyone moving. So we're continuing anyway, because what I want them to figure out by the end is this one they thought that sort of sucked doesn't. Like they took bigger risks. They did more interesting things. They tried something because they weren't so invested. And then they got a really interesting result. And then when they're really clinging to something, because it's starting to look really good, it's harder to take a risk. It's harder to even, you know, our desire for something to be good overrides our desire for something to be true. And then we just hard to get there. And when I'm like that with my work, I just have to give it a ton of space. That has to sit there long enough for me to be willing to ruin it again.
You know, what's interesting is sometimes when you take a long enough break from something like that, your opinion of what's good and what's finished has changed in that interim.
Big time.
And I think that's what allows you to keep moving with it. So I think when we get attached to an outcome, it's like we've hit, I want to say like just a narrowing point in our growth, and it's too tight to move through. So we're like, okay, maybe I need to back off and like grow a limb over here or something and do something else. Because then when I come back and look at work from last year, 6 months ago, even a week ago, what I've learned in the meantime, working on all these other projects, has informed my new opinion of what's good or what's allowable. Sometimes I'll look back and go, oh, why did I ever think that it wasn't already finished? Or I'll go like, oh, I thought that was great, but it's like so boring to me now.
Or like, I thought that was finished. Oh my goodness, that's not finished.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I got to do X, Y, and Z, but it needed that huge cushion. I always think of it as a cushion.
Yeah.
And that, you know, those things. And that's why if you work on just one thing, it makes it very difficult to give it a cushion, because you're either working on it or you're not. But if you have many things or a few things in the fire, you can turn your gaze. You know, I think of it as like, you know, I grew up in a family of four, and as people left for college, you know, I thought, oh, I'm not used to mom staring at me so much. You know, like now she's much more focused on me and my little sister. We don't like it. You know, like, can he screw up over there and you get worried about him? Can she do something that, you know, like stop looking at me? Yeah. And I feel like our work is like that too.
Ah, that's so brilliant. Okay. So I think if we were to leave listeners with some nuggets of wisdom and a way to bring it back into their like physical lived experience, I would say, yeah, allowing yourself some space to breathe around your projects, recognizing that our timelines, we're allowed to expand them out. So no matter what it is that you're beginning or continuing this year from last year, remember that, you know, the timeline isn't finish it all in one fell swoop. It's a conversation with your life and you get to live it and enjoy it. So if you find yourself getting really stressed out and frustrated and like, why isn't this happening exactly the way I wanted it right this moment? What you just said is like, well, what if you had something else to turn your focus towards, even just for a little while, and allow what you've already started to be a placeholder? That seems like a really brilliant piece of wisdom. So that when you're, you know, moving through the summer and heading towards the fall, you're then able to look back with more perspective and go, okay, what did work? What was allowed enough space to grow? What happened naturally anyway? And how am I feeling about it on the other side of the year? Rather than making our timelines so narrow and tight and stressful, because we have enough stress, like we can point this energy anywhere we want.
That's right. And what you said about actually taking the time to evaluate, I think that's so big, and it's so easy to ignore that. I need to do that myself more, really.
Yeah. Well, here's what I would say too, is a natural tendency right now is not to evaluate. I feel like that comes more in the fall for me anyway.
Oh, like, yeah. That's what you were saying, like later.
Yeah, like later, yeah. Because I feel like right now is still like we're still on the edge of this dreaming and wanting to bring a lot of things to life. So I think it's directional. I think we're trying to find directions of movement that feel more natural. And if we find that we're really stuck on one direction, maybe it's important to go, maybe I need another project that has a direction as well, so that I can bounce off and have a conversation between the two and see what's going on. Because I think that can be really regulating for us. And rather than getting caught in one thing, or like you said, having all of your eggs in one basket is really stressful. But if you have two or three and you're not only looking at one, you can relax a little bit. It's going to be okay. So I think
that's right. And when you are like much later on, because you didn't try to force something to be finished, that's when you can do that evaluating months down the road, or to see like, oh, it's interesting how I thought I wanted this, but now I see I want that for this.
Oh yeah.
Product.
And it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I think that is so important. And the thing also about finishing, I think people need to realize, is the last 10% of any project usually takes as much time as the first 90.
Oh, I love that. That is important. I think it's very true.
Because it's all this honing, it's all this refining, it's all these smaller motions, gestures, touches.
Yes.
The big global things have happened. But for it to really get finished, it needs these things that, you know, like for an artwork, that might be a lot of staring.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think like with a sewing project, I spend so much time trying to figure out, how am I making this bag? Like, what are the components? Is there going to be pockets? If so, how am I getting them to fit? Which fabrics, in which way? How many needles have I snapped on the way? You know, like, what's happening? And then, like you said, like all of that took a really long time. And the last 10% is me actually doing the stitching and then correcting and refining and going, nope, that didn't work right. Or oops.
Or using that iron.
Almost perfect. Yeah. Or realizing like, nope, that pocket wasn't big enough. Like, do it again. And suddenly it comes together. And I think that's something that we intuitively see. We watch something come together and we think it's instantaneous for other people. But when I'm doing it, I've now come to notice like, okay, when it finally comes together, yes, there is an instant in which it's done. And it took me 3 months.
That's like, right.
It didn't happen. Like, I had the idea and then I was gathering materials and then I was looking at my materials and then I had my sewing machine set up like I do right now. And then there was all of the stuff that went into figuring out, how am I layering these materials and making it happen? And then asking questions and coming back and making mistakes. What people see is the final product. What I'm happy to show you is, yay, look, I made this cool thing. But the reality of it is that took so much time and effort, and it's built on the back of my entire experience. Like, I couldn't make this bag 10 years ago. I didn't have the skill to do it. So the fact that I can look at something and go, oh, that looks interesting, and then just noodle it out in my mind is a skill set that I earned. And that's
right.
You know, like, and we all have that going on in our lives, is that you have skill sets that you've earned that you're now taking for granted. And sometimes when you complete something, like, yeah, freaking celebrate that you completed something, because I guarantee you it didn't happen today. It happened 10 years, you know,
like it took a long time. Making, like, right, 10 years worth of. And also, like, it's also important to remember that you can run into an obstacle or a skill obstacle where you can't, it's too hard. You can't, it feels too hard. You can't figure it out. And so that also can need a cushion, but it's also good to give yourself a strategy in there so that you just don't walk away completely. And like, I think with the sewing, it would be sew something simpler, you know, like, okay, this sleeve with this material is giving me a really hard time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I need to fix that. I'll make a little zipper bag.
But this comes right back to what you're saying about having multiple projects. And I find that intuitively I do that too, because I've got my ironing board over there with like 7 things on it, so that there's the project that I want to make. That's my big dream. And then there's the like 15 things that I already know how to do, that when I'm feeling really upset, I can go back to and get an easy win. So I think that's a great gift to give people, is to say, like, you have things in your life that are an easy win, and maybe now is a great time to think about what those are, so that you have them in a grab bag for when you're stressed out and you just need an easy win. You can go to that and go, you know what, I'm just going to do that one quick thing. that's really rewarding that I know how to do that I can be proud of. Everyone has something.
And that's right. Making a sauce, whatever it is, organizing a drawer, doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter, because we need those feel good moments, because that is one, it's the break that you need that allows the inspiration to come. So it's like sometimes just putting something in my closet and forgetting about it for 2 or 3 months. It's weird. Like I'll have a dream or wake up and suddenly I'm like, how do I suddenly know how to do this? And it's not that I suddenly know how to do it. It's that I've had enough time digesting and having other input in my life that my brain has had enough time to put it together and figure it out.
That's exactly.
But if we never give the break, if we don't rest, there's no chance for your brain to do all this magic for us.
And it's not either or. Like you didn't know how to do that, but you don't perceive that as a permanent state.
Correct.
And so it's a temporary state, even if that state is a temporary state is months.
That's okay. And sometimes not, I wasn't focusing on that project the whole time either. Like taking the break was not with the purpose of figuring it out. It was to give my brain time away from that and focused on something else. So I think it's important that we build that flexibility in and say, you know, if I've gotten really caught in something that is like hitting that wall, how can I support and nurture myself and give myself enough time to relax and feel like me again and feel proud of myself in other ways? Because weirdly, I don't know why, it just does. It serves you. Like your brain will somehow figure it out, or you'll have enough space that you'll like the right video will come to you, or you'll meet the right person that has that skill set and fills that gap. But it'll be when you're not looking for it. It's weird. It's like when people say, like, when you find the person of your dreams, it's like when you least expect it and you've given up and you've looked away. I was like, yeah, it's kind of like
right. You're in the 7-Eleven and you haven't showered for 3 days, you know.
Yeah.
And you're wearing your mother's coat. You know, that's when you're going to.
But that's how life works sometimes. And it's okay that it's that bizarre and weird. Mm. Yeah.
Because it's really about not forcing.
Yeah.
And making sure that. Like we're and believing in not forcing and trusting in that and trusting in your allowing yourself.
I love it. All right. This has been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much.
I loved it too. Thank you back. I just had a great time.
I'm so glad. All right. So before we close out, I want to invite people listening to really think about where their desire is right now, like coming into this energetic season, maybe feeling like you want to change everything in your life and start some new things, to really give it a moment to settle and go, okay, what are the one or two or three things that feel really exciting and good to nourish? And think of this as this process, just like we discussed, like there's going to be ups and downs. We have to allow for things to surprise us and grow in unexpected ways, to trust that we have what it takes to make something happen, and that maybe, just maybe, it doesn't have to happen on society's timeline, and it can happen on a human, real, lived timeline for us. And I think if we did that, that could be a really nourishing way to kick off this season. And I'm curious, Sarah, what you would say to them as well. Like if you're feeling that urge to get something started, what's the last piece of advice that you would want them to remember?
Rome wasn't built in a day. And I do think that urge, you know, we can honor the urge. That's an excitement to want to try new things. And maybe that excitement is a spring thing connected to anger as well. You know, like it's, these things can be flip sides. And just that each step helps you on the next step. And so just focusing on that first step and giving it time to breathe will help you know what your next step is. And when you can really honor that pace, as you were saying, then I think you start to really experience your projects, your dreams as you know, your way of moving through the world, as your gift to yourself, as your you being you, and respecting it. How that respecting that timeline, I guess.
I love it. You know, Sarah, I'm thinking I might want to touch back in with you in September and have like the other half of the year conversation to see like, okay, how did our projects go? What did happen? And talk about it in a real practical way, because at that point, we will have already lived some of this stuff and we'll have some concrete examples to say like, this is actually how it plays out. It doesn't always happen overnight. And some of the things that we're starting now may not even be done, and we will be evaluating them at that time of year, which I think will be kind of cool.
Oh, that sounds great. Yay. I love that idea.
Oh, thank you so much. So thanks everybody listening for joining this special episode with Sarah Bush. Sarah, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me in two places, really, and on Substack at sarahbush.substack.com. And Sarah has an H in it. So sarahbush.substack.com. And that's my newsletter that I call the Pink Teacup. And then also my art website, which is Sarah Bush Artworks, plural, sarahbushartworks.com.
I love it. So all of those links are going to be in the show notes. And I just want to thank you all again for joining us for this bonus special episode. And on Monday, we're going to be coming back talking about how we move through this energy without burning out. And over the next week, talking about how to set boundaries that really help you protect all of this creative and inspirational energy that you're having so that you have a chance to let it take hold in the first place. All right. Thank you so much. And I will see you guys on Monday.
Thank you for joining me this week. This podcast is one part of a larger seasonal ecosystem of support. Through the course and seasonal workshops, we move beyond ideas into sustained practical growth and rest cycles at a pace that your nervous system can truly integrate and trust. You can learn more at anchoredandalive.com whenever it feels right. Until next time, stay steady, and we'll meet here again next week.